Are you ready?
It's Afternoons with OMF.
Well, Rob Gronkowski come out of retirement. He's been all over the place on this.
Well, you said you had a 50%. I have a more like 95%.
95% is the kiss of death, though.
I did not say that.
Anytime anybody reports that something's 95% likely to happen, it never happens.
Well, go to hell.
I think the only person that convinces him to stay is Tom.
That a direct appeal from Tom Brady could be the thing that ultimately makes the difference for Gronk.
Nobody's listening to me.
I think that he does like a Roger Clemens type of a deal.
Oh, my God, Roger Clemens.
Rock is back.
Of all the dramatic things I've ever seen,
Andrew Kashner will make his Red Sox debut today. A big right-hander.
The guy with the beard?
With a long beard.
Didn't really command my off-speed very well.
A three-run homer for Teoscar Hernandez.
Didn't really do a lot of things well.
Right now.
Why did you pick number 11?
I want to be the reason that no one asked me.
On Sports Radio WEEI.
Can't even blame the guy with the beard, though. I guess we could. He gave up, what, five earned runs or whatever, right? He did give up that. Supposed to have a great changeup, but wasn't working.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
But you know, a very wise man once told me.
Who was that? Who was the wise man?
Dick Berardino.
Oh, hold on. Okay, I was going to say, what did he sound like?
His name is Dick Berardino.
Good man.
And he once said to me, when is a changeup no longer a changeup? And I said, I don't know, Dick. You tell me. He said, when you throw it every damn pitch. It is no longer a changeup. I mean, he became predictable. You don't think Teoscar was sitting on that first one?
Absolutely.
I mean, you see the leg kick? He was timing a changeup.
Yeah.
He got a good changeup, but it's the overuse.
All right, I already threw the towel in. Everybody knows I've thrown the towel in.
Oh, no. Wait, hold on.
I've thrown the towel
on the Sox. You're officially.
I already did.
No. I want to say you're officially throwing the towel in.
Because they can't. Yes, I was. I argued with you for the last 2 days. They can't catch four teams. By the way, they lost another game last night. They are now four behind in the loss column for the second wild card spot.
I've been an optimist with this.
How do you feel now?
How you feeling today?
Because today I feel like crap.
Right.
Because I feel like that lady is starting to warm up. It's like, me. Because you sit there in that discussion
she's
that we
had. She's on the second verse, trust me.
The discussion that we had the last couple days had to do with the teams that the Red Sox had to chase, had to catch. And that was the Cleveland Indians, and the Oakland Athletics, and maybe Texas. But just look at Cleveland and Oakland. They've won 8 out of their last 10.
Right.
So I sit there and go, well, crap, they're doing what they should be doing at this point in time, trying to gain some space between the other teams that are catching them. And the Red Sox, can they win 8 out of 10?
No.
Can they just...
Well, I'll tell you this. Maybe 8 out of 10. They can't go on what you said yesterday, and it was the only valid point you made in the entire show yesterday
for four hours.
There you go.
And that was, they need to win 10 in a row. Based on what you're seeing with the bullpen right now, so the offense has been tremendous.
No way.
Offense gets them back into games, and then the bullpen gives it up. There's no way they're winning 10
in a row. Let's just be fair. Let's just say pitching. Because it's really, I know what the bullpen is, right? This rotation's not good enough because your bullpen isn't strong. And is anybody else, would they be shocked if Heath Hembree ended up on the IL today?
No. Velocity dropped last night.
Cora needs to check on him.
Well, that's what I mean. So he's throwing 90 miles an hour. He's had some issues.
Check his room.
Health issues this year.
His shoelaces.
He's throwing 90. He's getting hit all over the ballpark. That was one of those games that I've talked about many times, where it wasn't a blown save, but it was a blown opportunity to possibly come back and have a nice win.
No question.
You know, we see it all the time, that Sale game, 5-2. Hey, 5-2 in the fifth. Well, you can't score four runs? Of course you can, but you know what? It's 11-2 when you blink. Last night, 6-4, top of the order coming up, I think.
Yeah.
And then here comes Hembree, right? 10-4, thanks for coming. So now if Hembree's on the IL and you're looking at Workman and Barnes as the only proven big league arms, in my opinion, in that bullpen. I like Taylor. Brewer's throwing better. Okay, but still. Your starters have to go 7 or 8, and you're lucky to get 6 out of them to keep you in. And, you know, they're getting the game, but it ain't good enough.
See, I think Cora kind of summed it up for me as far as what I was looking. When they have a lead, they can't bury teams. They can't pull away from them and just put, like you used to say, put their foot on their throat and just bury them.
How do you do that when you're up 5-0 and it's 5-4?
Or if and they can't play catch-up. So they're screwed either way.
Well, I think they can play catch-up. I think this lineup is great. The problem
it has less to do with the lineup as it does to do with the bullpen not allowing them. But listen, say they catch up. Well, they give it up again.
Well, that's the point.
They catch up. They give it up.
That's it.
I mean, it's 4-4.
They can catch up, but they're going to give it right back.
It's 4-4, right?
Yeah.
It's a nice little comeback here. Okay, now we can control the rest of the game. The very first pitch next inning is a curveball hanging a curveball in her half to smoke the first pitch. And now you're down 5-4 again, you know? The very first pitch.
It's demoralizing.
So as soon as there was no shutdown innings at all from Cashner. You know, none at all. And again,
the first inning.
That's not a shutdown, though. You went out there and you put up a run at the bottom, and they can put up three.
Nobody got a run.
But I'm just saying, like, it's – and I like the Cashner move more for what it just feels like, right? They needed a starter. They went out and got him. Okay, they got him. Good. Now, whether he performs, he needs to perform. But this rotation, they have to go out and give you 7 and 8 because you got two guys. And you can't use them every single night, so what do you do?
Well, you're fooling yourself.
How do you rattle off wins?
If you think, as you said,
score Christian. Score 10 a night.
Right. They can win 10 in a row. Because they'll score runs. The rest of the summer, they'll hit. I think they'll put up some big offensive numbers. But they can't stop anybody, and you can't catch up. If you were up there right now, maybe you could stay above water. The fact is, you're underwater. You've got to get up on the surface. Not going to happen. It's not, and I think reality is really going to set in the next few weeks when you have to go up against the Yankees and the Rays. And maybe what they do is you get to the end of July here, and you start dealing players off. Maybe you look at it and say, let's build for the future.
You know, I've always
because I don't know how this team's going to react.
I've always felt that the deadline, everybody's talking about making moves, and I'm like, they're just – and this is like 3 weeks ago, even a week ago, even the other day. I was like, they're not going to be that far out where they're going to make big moves, you know. The big ones. You guys tell me. I mean, you got, what, 5 more games here against these two teams. If you don't win 5 of them, or if you don't go 4-1, which would still be, like, disappointing, you know, a 5-2 run against these two, they got to beat them up. But I guess you go 4-1. How do they get through that 14-game stretch?
Call or I should Yankees say
the next 8 games of the deadline. You know, so against Tampa and New York, I think it's 8 before you, on the deadlines. What if you go 2-6? What if you are 7 games out? Now you start having some weird conversations. That are calling in like months ago, you know, wanting to deal Mookie and everybody else. Now you start having some real conversations if you're 7 games out in about 10 days.
What happens first? Dombrowski and management, they decide that they need to make a move, or the roster, the players themselves start to recognize and realize that, okay, this is hopeless.
David,
we're not catching anybody. We're good at we're smart enough and we're old enough to recognize we don't have
Lou already brought one up, and they may be faced with it today. If Embry's got to go on the IR, then what are you going to do? You need another arm out there. You can't go with what you've got right now.
I heard Eovaldi is in the building. Eovaldi is in the building.
You got to get somebody. He's not ready. He's got to do 2 rehab
assignments. He's rehabbing today or tomorrow, whatever it is, right?
Yeah. So we'll get a lot more of that out of Core when he comes in here at 2:30, and you can start to hear the frustration on his voice.
What's going on?
In the last few days.
Yeah.
You can feel
it. And the urgency. You pitch bad, you're gone.
But guys, on Monday, we sat here and said, what happens if you get to the 30th of July and this team is 5 games out of a wild card? Right now, they're 4 in the loss column. That's all I look at is the loss column. Yeah. You can't make up
those 3. Right. They're 3.
3 overall, but 4 in the loss column.
No. Well, 4 in the loss column to Cleveland, but 3 behind Tampa and Oakland. So, you know, it's they just got more games, right?
Right,
so,
right.
3 or 4 games.
Okay, so
but you're right,
games
it could
out.
Be 6 or 7 easily.
Right. I mean, especially when you look at the schedule, and you won't even finish up the Yankee and Tampa Bay series, right, by the time you get to the 30th of July.
I think there's 8 of them.
It goes to the August the 4th.
I want to say there's 3 with Tampa, 4 with New York, and a game or 2 with Tampa again before
the
deadline.
There are 3 and 3 against Tampa and 4 and 4 against the Yankees. One's a makeup game.
Yeah, yeah, but what I'm saying is you play Tampa Bay 3 times, you play New York 4 times, and then you play Tampa once or twice before the 31st.
Correct, and each one home and away. The question I'm having is, how far deep are you into that by the time you get to the trading deadline? Do you know what I mean? So are you 10 games into that, 11 games into it?
That's what I was trying to tell you. You don't comprehend. I'll tell you right now. You're after Baltimore, you got 3 in Tampa, okay? Then you come home, and then you've got 4 against New York. You have an off day. You play Tampa on the 30th. You play Tampa on the 31st. That's 9. Games.
9 games into it.
Okay? So you just start doing the math. I mean, 9 games. Let's just say you go 5-4, and you're like, hey, it's a tough stretch. They're good teams. 5-4, if you know, Oakland or if Cleveland or if Texas or whatever, and they're sitting there going, you know, you're 5-4. I mean, what do they go? If they go 8-1, 7-2, you lost 2 or 3 more games.
Math is
right.
Hard.
It is hard.
That's the problem with having so many teams in the mix. If it's one team, let's say it's Cleveland, that you have to catch, you can sit there and go, okay, what do we got left with Cleveland on the schedule? We can make it up head-to-head.
Okay, so let me show you a brighter side, because there's a lot of doom and gloom.
I don't know why I'm in such a good mood.
So, okay, do we give Cashner a break?
Yeah,
we give him a break?
Yeah.
He hasn't pitched in 9 days. He had a long layoff. Give him a break. I almost feel like the Eovaldi thing, by the time he gets back, it's going to be too late.
By the time he's
able to help you, it's going to be too late. Well, even if he pitches great, even if he's healthy and he's a 7, 8, 9 guy, or he's a closer, whatever, by that point in time, I feel like it's going to be too late.
I tell you, you're going to be asking a lot for him, because it looks like, you know, he's going to join the big leagues at the beginning of a 14-game stretch for Tampa and New York. So his appearances, if he's going to be that high leverage, right out of the gate, is going to be very, very important for this team. He can't afford to kind of have 3 or 4 outings, try to get used to type of thing, right? I mean, maybe you give him an inning. I mean, that's the problem. Normally, if you got a bullpen that's set right now, which a normal big league team would, other than this one, you would be able to sit there and say, okay, game one against Tampa, maybe we win 7-1, let's give him the 9th. You know, maybe we're down 8-1, let's give him the 9th, just to get his feet wet. But you can't do that, because you can't come back the next night and probably pitch him on back-to-back days in a real high leverage spot, which is probably his role, given what you have out there for talent. So it's you're asking just too much for him. Too much.
And that's why I feel like if this was their philosophy,
score 10 a night.
Oh, that's the other way. All right, so then fine. Really? That's why when you have a lead, you can't hold it. And even when you're trying, even though you have the ability to play catch up, how many times do you have to do it in a game? Can you do it once and tie it up at 4-4 like they did last night? Sure. Okay. Then they come back in the next inning. They get 2 runs. Okay. So now it's 6-4. Next thing you know, it's 10-4.
Listen,
how many times can you do it? The ninth inning, they scored 4 runs in the ninth.
Same team every night, guys. It's the same freaking team every single night. And guess what? A month ago, 2 months ago, people sat around and said, okay, they'll flip the switch. The manager said we can flip the switch. All right. We went 2 of the Celtics last year. You're getting to the point right now where there's no switch to flip. Okay, you got 2 weeks on this. I just looked up Cleveland. This is what Cleveland's playing in the next couple weeks. They're already in 2 games into a 4-game series with Detroit, in which they've won 8-6 and 8-0. So they have 2 more with Detroit. Then they have 3 with Kansas City. They have 3 with Toronto. 4 with Kansas City. And then they finally have to face Houston, and then they get Texas.
Well, they got Houston. But they got Texas. They got the Yankees.
Yeah.
They also have Minnesota in there.
And they have Boston coming up on August the 12th. August the 12th, it may be over.
So I looked at the schedule also. I said, okay, because this is what you're doing now. You're looking, you're monitoring the other team's schedule and rooting for the White Sox and rooting for Houston. And hopefully by the time you get a chance to play them, that you can make up the difference. So how many games do they play Cleveland? What do they get, 3?
I think they get 3.
It's a 3. All right, so good. Just imagine.
Cleveland.
If you could. Status quo, you go to Cleveland, 3 games in Cleveland, you're tied or you've taken them over. Or you've at least made it interesting. I still feel like there's still a bunch of opportunities for this team.
There's plenty of opportunities, but they're just not taking advantage of them. No, I'm just saying there's plenty of opportunities. It's just that their season will be, you know, the rest of this homestand and those 9 games before the deadline.
I mean,
that will be the season. You got 5 and now you got 14 games, and that'll decide if you're making real changes to this organization this year.
But you got
to
make them 9. You got to make them, as you pointed out, 9 games out of those 14 games. You're not going to be able to wait for the backside of those
finals. Yeah, it's got
to
happen now.
Because that's the trading deadline. We don't have a second trading deadline this year.
Nope.
I think this is, and again, too many teams. And to me, it's, I don't know how they do it, but if they don't do it in the next 2 weeks, they are screwed.
We're doomed. Right.
You're doomed, exactly. All right, we get to the phone calls. As we said, Alex Cora will join us here at 2:30. Some interesting comments by him last night after the game and before the game last night with the latest of what's going on in Puerto Rico. And all of the stories out there where the governor right now is under tremendous pressure. There are riots in the streets right now. The cruise companies are not even going into San Juan right now.
We've also got an old story resurfacing, too.
What's that again?
We also have an old story.
We have an old story. We
Mr.
have the
David
old,
Price yeah. and Dennis Eckersley.
Yes, we do. Mm. We'll get to all of that and more today on OMF.
We're back with more Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
Alex, there's a report in a paper in Puerto Rico that you're not going to the White House on Thursday. Can you confirm that?
Yeah, I can confirm it. Yeah, I'm not going. Like the report said, you know, the government has done, you know, some things back home that are great, you know, but as the report said, you know, we still have a long ways to go, you know, and that's our reality. So, you know, it's pretty tough, you know, to go celebrate when we're in where we at, you know. And I'd rather not go and just, you know, be consistent with everything.
Alex Corrin, he came on our show, and we talked extensively about this in our weekly get-togethers here on Wednesday, and we'll do it again today, obviously, because there's far more new information right now. There's a corruption scandal throughout Puerto Rico. It deals right back with the governor's office and the governor. And it's become an entire mess to the point where the people are really pissed and they've gone to the streets. And it's led to violence out in the streets. So last night, Alex Corr, who did not go to the White House because he did not feel that the Trump administration was funneling the funds correctly down to Puerto Rico, had to address the latest of what's going on right now in his homeland.
It's not easy to watch what's going on. I'm disappointed, mad. Sometimes I wonder, kind of like, where are we going? You know, I got my kids who, you know, I'm not planning on moving from there. But then you see what's going on, and you're like, what's going to happen? At the same time, you know, we've been through this before as a country. The only thing I can tell the people from back home and the people that live in the state, just stay together. It's kind of sad that I do feel more worried now than when Maria went by. Because when Maria went by, you know, the only one that had control of it was God. And now it's tough to understand that we are in this situation when the people that put us in this situation was the people that were selected or elected by our countrymen. And it's embarrassing, too. I'm proud. I'm a proud Puerto Rican. You know, I know we're going to be fine. It just sucks, you know, just to watch it and see what's going on.
We'll find out. We'll hear from him at 2:30, and you can hear more of what
Alex
feels.
I know a lot of
it.
People jumped all over this, right, when he didn't go, when he was talking about how the support. And so now when this comes out, all those people, I'm sure, are like, see, I told you. Right. You know, and now he's finally seeing the light. Why didn't he know, you know, this was going on in the first place? And again, I go back to when we talked about it at first. I went out there this offseason. And, you know, when you get away from the resorts, it's hard, you know, especially if you're Alex Corr and you're out there and you're hearing from family members, you know, who may be naive with the government. But none of that really matters because you see that they're suffering. So he took the anger out and just felt like he didn't feel right. You talked about the text from his mother, was going there and sort of supporting a government that he felt didn't support him. Now he's finding out that that government didn't support him is his own. You know, I know a lot of people said you should have known that, right? Because the corruption stuff was out there.
Well, the corruption was there for many years.
It was so personal for him seeing people that he loved suffer and still suffer.
Well, yeah,
that he just couldn't do it.
Was this just blaming, just misplaced anger, misplaced blame? Because it's easy to pick on Trump.
Yeah.
It's easy to pick on the United States and Trump, and he didn't do this. Because Trump, I don't feel like he came out and he said, listen, we've done this, we've done that. Like, we've done a lot. We've done more than we've ever done. Puerto Rico, for any country.
Well, they've already uncovered $15 million of hurricane aid that apparently the governor,
Ricardo
Rossello, who apparently has handed on to his cronies. And so he's backdooring it to their company or whatever. But this was, and Trump brought this up, this was an issue going well before the hurricane came through there. Because if you remember, they had electrical problems with the hurricane. And the reason was they had an antiquated electric grid system that this governor never and the previous people never wanted to fix. And there were cronies that were getting paid off as part of all of this electrical system. So you're right, Lou. You know, it's his homeland. He wants to think the best of it. He's looking at people who now, after that storm, had absolutely nothing. And he's saying, please, can somebody help them right now? And it's got to be devastating. We'll find out in a few minutes for him to now find out that his own government down there, elected officials, are playing games. And it's even worse because the Justice Department went in there. They have uncovered all of these leaked messages, text messages.
Yeah, these are awful.
And, oh, my God, homophobic and misogynistic. And,
mocking women, handicapped. Yeah. And he's actually mocking his own victims.
Oh, it's
Hurricane Maria.
Unfortunately, it's all in Spanish, and we're reading the interpretation, so it's difficult for us to read on the air because we don't know which words we can
say.
Well,
I think you can say it in Spanish and get away with
it.
No,
you can't.
I'm getting a knock from Curtis. Go ahead and read it.
No, you cannot do that. But it's really... Real bad stuff. It's really bad stuff. I mean,
so I wonder if he feels. I mean, I don't know. I guess we'll ask.
We'll find out.
Do you think he feels?
He should have gone.
Yeah. Do you think if under a different set of circumstances with this knowledge, would he reconsider going to the White House?
Well, let me ask you.
It seemed like that was the catalyst. That was the biggest issue. That Puerto Rico was still suffering, and the United States wasn't doing it enough. Yet what they did. Was manipulated. What the funds that they did give was stolen. But $15 million. Imagine what $15 million does.
It's going to be more.
I would think it'd be a lot more than that.
They think it's going to be more. They've only uncovered the $15 million. The Justice Department is just at the start.
But hold on, real quick. What about private citizens who went down there and gave aid and gave help and donated money?
None of that. This is not included.
I know it isn't. But just that's one layer. Right? Okay, as far as stealing from the United States government and the funds that they were bringing down. But there was also tons and tons and tons of private citizens, U.S. citizens, that were giving aid, donations, and funds that were trying to raise money.
I have no idea
where it's gone too, probably.
I have no idea where it went. But getting back to your point about him not going to the White House, and I would say this, that if he went to the White House, and we were talking to him about this, maybe you could get an opportunity, an audience with the president, you could talk about this. I'm not sure that would have done any good because the president would have sat there and told him what he did not want to hear, and that we're sending aid down there, and there's all sorts of corruption going, and it's your elected officials that are taking it away. So he would come back telling his people, his friends, his relatives, Trump is just passing the buck.
Yeah.
So there was
you got to keep the lie going.
Exactly. There's a communication split there, and you weren't going to gain anything by it. It's easy for us now to say it would have been a lot different. I'm not sure it would have been any different.
No, well, and I remember Victor Rodriguez, who was the old hitting coach here. I remember right after it all happened, you know, we were months into it, 6 months. It was last year when he was still here. And it was a couple years ago when it all went down. And he's like, you know, San Juan is okay, right? Because they open up the ports, and that's where they're bringing all the stuff. You know, but the problem is that there's no gas. So if you live an hour from San Juan, you can't get anything. You know, you can't get up there. They say, hey, come on up. We've got stuff for you. But nobody could get there. You know, so there was no way to transport all the goods and funds or whatever, all the food and you name it, to the people that didn't live in San Juan. They couldn't get up there to get it. And his family was, you know, I know Alex is, maybe 30, 40 minutes from San Juan. I think Victor's was the same way. And they couldn't get it. So the whole island was suffering except for this one little area that was getting all this aid.
Yeah,
I think they could have done maybe a better job with the other money to transport it. But what'd they do with that money? He gave it to all his cronies, all of his buddies.
You know, the stuff that I'm reading, I think Alex...
Yeah, he gave it to them and they didn't do any work.
Right. I think Alex is right when he says this is worse than Hurricane Maria, because right now what you've got is the governor is denying all this stuff. He's not going to move. You're in a democracy now in that country, and they want him to resign. You've got police out there in riot gear. They're firing tear gas, rubber bullets, and tourism is about to dry up because the cruise ships are now refusing to go into the port because they don't believe that their passengers are safe.
Well, it is, because you're talking about a hurricane coming in and wiping out, you know, an island, you know, and people suffering, people dying. Now you find out that your own people were the ones that didn't help. Your own people are the ones that took money and watched other Puerto Ricans suffer with an opportunity maybe to help them. You chose not to, and you instead just fed the pockets of your buddies and didn't use that money to help your own people. So I would absolutely think that that would hurt more.
Yeah, and it has ramifications well beyond this. All right, we'll talk to Alex in a few minutes. We'll talk baseball. We'll talk about the team. And, yes, we will talk about what he's dealing with right now with his homeland, all part of OMF. We're doing it live over here at Fenway Park.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at OMF on WEEI. Before, during, and after the show at OMF on WEEI. Let's get you back to more of Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
We're on OMF. We're doing it live at Fenway Park. Why are we getting it in the speakers here?
Christian, no music, huh?
I don't have any music for
Jesus.
You today.
You promised that a month ago.
I know. You know, every time I see you, I come back from vacation.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, I came back from vacation again, and I was like, ah, crap, I knew there was something else, and I'm leaving it on Friday.
Wow. All right, time for us to talk with Alex Cora. Brought to you by Arbella Insurance, Cumberland Farms, the official coffee of the Red Sox Radio Network. We got a lot to talk about today, don't we?
We do, yeah.
Yeah, so let's start right off the bat, and we'll start with the team. You consistently say that you're consistently inconsistent, which I think is accurate. I've noticed, though, in the last week, you're not giving a timetable of we're good, we're fine. It's we got to do it today. We got to do it after last night's game tomorrow, because you can't say today that game's over. Are you running out of time here, and do these guys understand the urgency of this?
They understand the urgency. On a daily basis, we come in and we work and we prepare, but for some reason, you know, we take off, we take a step back, we win one, we lose two, then we win four, we lose two. So, you know, like I've been saying all along, you know, like consistent to being inconsistent. And it's on every aspect of the game. Well, although the offense, I do feel like the way Mookie's swinging the bat, Rafi, Xander, we're in a good spot now offensively. But like yesterday, we came back, we give up two, then we got men on, and we don't score. The other day, the base running mistakes, and yesterday, the pick to first, we throw it away. So
it's all the same stuff, though, Alex.
It hasn't been clean.
And how do you fix it? Because you've been saying this every week, and you recognize it, obviously. Those guys must recognize it. But how is it not cleaned up? Is it a matter of you simply don't have enough talent to be able to do it?
I think we're talented. I think the whole league knows that we're talented. We're not executing, you know, and we can preach everything we want, you know. Like we had a situation against Dodgers, you know, minute second, no outs. I decided we're not gonna bunt. We're gonna have take three shots at it. We hit a ground ball short, and Jackie takes off, you know, and
you're on.
I think it's more like headset. Yeah,
audio's going funky here.
Yeah, you know. That's not us, you know, and then we talk about base running and we talk about doing the little things, and when it happens, you know, we get to the situations and we didn't do it in 2 days, and that costs a game on Sunday, and then on Monday we had a chance to add on, we don't add on, and then all of a sudden we have to bring Barnes and work because although we scored 10 runs, but we could have scored more, and that will help you the rest of the week. And we haven't done that on a consistent basis, and it's costing us.
So take me through that decision that Sunday night, right? So man on second. Mm-hmm. I know analytics now, you know, best chance, you know, score more runs. You only needed one, though. If it was Mookie, Devers, obviously top of the order, but with Marco, mm-hmm. why? And that kid looks like he was running fastballs up and away. That was going to be tough to get that ground ball to second. Why not bunt him over?
I feel like you take three shots, and it's not analytics. Is Marco Hernandez with a guy that throws fastballs away, and Marco stays on pitches. He got it to a 3-1 count, so I don't think we're going to bunt in a 3-1 count. He actually put a good at-bat to get it to our advantage, and he missed a pitch going the other way, off the wall, foul ball, and that's the way I believe in that. You know, it's not that somebody is giving me information, or I believe that you take three shots there. We take the bat away. I mean, you can say the next guy, yeah, he bunts him over. Mookie hits a fly ball to right. That wasn't going to happen because you take away the bat from him and the next guy most likely. Yeah, we got Xander. He's a sinker ball pitcher. We're one pitch away from a double play. So I believe in three shots with minute second and out.
So Eovaldi, he's going to do a rehab start when?
Tomorrow.
Today? Tomorrow. Weather pending?
Yes.
So realistically, based on just, you know, his body, his mechanics, and the timeline of when he can actually make a difference, I guess, when do you think he will actually be able to go?
We'll see how he goes tomorrow. That's the most important thing, if he can pitch tomorrow, and then we'll make a decision. This will be, realistically, his third rehab game. I mean, he had two against, he faced Mitch and Sandy here. He had one before that, so it's actually kind of like his third one. And if so we feel comfortable with him, we'll go with him. You know,
but so if he's good today or tomorrow,
we most likely he'll be active on, during the weekend.
And then he will be what? Is he? He's going to be your closer or 7, 8, 9 guy?
He'll be a reliever. You know, and then I think he'll set everything up. One of the things that we got going right now is work. You know, Brandon Workman is doing an outstanding job, and you start comparing him with the great relievers of the league. He's been elite. You know, and then you have Nate and Barnsey can, you know, we can mix a match with him in another inning, and JT throwing the ball well. You saw what Darwinson did yesterday. So I do believe, you know, if Nate pans out and he throws the ball the way he's been throwing the ball, you know, that's one inning. And we have worked for another inning. You mix a match the seventh, and, you know, see, the starters go six.
Yeah, because we were saying yesterday just the top, like as far as if you're going to just give me the top three, the most important guys on this team right now, Eovaldi and his ability to be productive and to kind of save some arms and just, you know, get some wins for you has got to be one of the three.
Yeah, I mean, he's very important. And not because he's going to the bullpen. He was very important early in the season. And we've been in that spot that, you know, he gets hurt and we've been trying to search for a fifth starter. It hasn't worked. And, you know, there's been a lot of games in that spot that it's been like close games. And we have to go to the bullpen more than earlier than usual and a lot, you know, and all of a sudden as manager, you know, the next day you're like, wow, you know, we're very tight tonight, and, you know, or Chris goes 4 2/3, or David, he's sick in Houston, and he goes one inning, and we have to go to the bullpen. But I think, you know, with Cashner, he's gonna settle down. I mean, yesterday one pitch to Teoscar, it wasn't a good pitch to Teoscar. He hits a home run, that's three runs, but I do feel he can go six and give us a chance to win. Rick kind of like found something the last three innings against Toronto 2 days ago. So I do believe that the rotation is going to do their job. If they do what they're supposed to, go six innings, we're going to be in good shape.
So Chris Sale, you know, it's been just a roller coaster, right? Out of the gate, we're like, what is going on? You know, velocity. Then he looked really good, and it was middle, 8, 9. Now it seemed like Friday night to me, he said, you know what, screw it, the second half, I'm coming out throwing hard against a good team. And the location within the zone, I felt like, you know, wasn't there. Can he do that? I know it's been an odd year. It's like, is it a strength thing? Does he have to live at 94, kind of be like Price, you know, 93, 94, be able to locate? Can he not dial up 97, 98 with location?
I do believe that he was off in the inside part of the plate, and that team did a good job kind of like staying away from that pitch. As soon as they recognized he wasn't getting the ball, and we're talking about an inch, you know, or just missing a spot by nothing. And as soon as they recognized that, They moved their contact point away from their bodies, you know. And he had good velocity. Velocity went down later on in the game. And they did a good job staying with the game plan. A lot of foul balls. The pitch to JT, to Turner, was a fastball. He was supposed to be away. Middle of the play, 91. Hits out of the ballpark. Then the hit-by-pitch to Barnes on the slider. That kind of like changed the whole complexion of that inning. He has JT on an 0-2 count, 1-2 count, hangs a slider, is a double. And he has Freeze on an 0-2 count, too, and he wasn't able to put him away. So I don't know if it's, you know, he's that bad, quote-unquote. He did get hit hard in Toronto,
yeah,
you know, with the home runs. But in this one, if we execute two pitches, it's only one run in 5 or 6 innings. So I do believe he's not that far. But, yeah, he needs to make adjustments. And hopefully tomorrow he'll make those adjustments and take off again.
See, we're talking because I don't think necessarily he's hurt, right? You guys never pitch a guy that's hurt. My question is like strength, you know, endurance. Like I know you guys test all those things. All that stuff checks out with him.
Yeah, he's fine. as you know, the start after the All-Star break is an interesting one because they're not around here, and you still have the, you know, go home and all that stuff. They still, you know, trying to, you know, get their throwing in, whatever. But it's still, quote-unquote, a vacation, in a sense. And you know it, Lou.
It's
5 days, and I'm not saying, I'm not using that as an excuse, but we'll see tomorrow how he goes. You know, I do believe that he's in a good place. We're going to make some adjustments where we go with certain pitches. And if we do that, we execute, he's going to be in good shape.
We're talking to Alex Cora over here at Fenway Park. It is amazing when you think about it. If you had given me 1,000 names and said, who's going to hold the record for the most consecutive starts without a win at Fenway Park? You give me 1,000 names, I'm picking Chris Sale, 999 or 1,000, and he owns that record. So what was that all about yesterday? He's doing a bullpen session. and you've got all of his other teammates are hanging around. Was that support? Was that, hey, guys, go out there and see if you guys can see a little something, maybe something he's doing. What was that all about? Because you don't – do you normally see something like that, Alex?
I mean, there were two guys that they had to throw anyways, Porcello and Eduardo. The relievers were around, and we've done it before. Yeah, and in my case, sometimes I go just to see if I can pick something up and talk to Dana. I know the two catchers, they made a point of going there yesterday just to see where we at. And as far as communication, there's a few things that we're trying to work with, and communication is very important, especially from Sandy and Christian. So I think everybody there is a good message, whatever. It was more about, let's see if we can find something else, you know. And you know, Dana does an outstanding job. Craig Bjornsson, our bullpen coach, does an outstanding job. The information we get from upstairs is great, but sometimes you never know who can pick something up, and it's kind of like the thing that changes the whole thing around.
Yeah.
You know, I was wondering, the Sandy Leon, right? I mean, yeah, I think he had Porcello and Sale the last couple outings. Vasquez was in there before, and he's having a great offensive year. You put him at first base the other day because to get his bat in there. But then you go back to Leon with those two guys. Is that just a comfort thing? Because, I mean, we all know. I think guys love throwing to Sandy Leon. That's not a secret. But for those two guys in particular, was that more of the mindset?
No, the last one with Rick was the last game against Dodgers. You know, it was a long one for Christian, a grind. You know, as far as like calling the games, that's why we went with Sandy. The one with Chris is because of, I say, you know what? The numbers back it up. Why not? Let's put there. Christian can play first. He can play second. He's a good defender.
They back it up with Porcello too.
Yeah.
Numbers.
Yeah. I mean, but that's a good bat, man. And we gotta score runs, you know. And as far as like game plan and all that, it's the same game plan. I know sometimes catchers go somewhere else in certain situations, but at the end, Christian is a good defensive catcher, and he has a pretty good idea what he's doing out there, and it's not a knock on him. At the end, we have to execute pitches, and if we do that, we get people out.
So do you feel like you're a good mediator?
I mean, I don't know.
Well, because I think you're going to need to get between two guys. Do you know what's going on with Eck now and David Price? Have you seen any of the tweets that's been going on?
I heard about
it,
yeah. I heard about it.
Well, what is it? What is it with David Price and Dennis Eckersley? I mean, it's like there's this personal issue he has with them. So, you know, we tweet out the show. I mean, WEI tweets out Dennis Eckersley is still baffled over David Price.
In response to that Globe magazine.
Yeah, it's one of the Chad Finn article. And then David Price, you know, crying emoji. Somebody asked him, okay, why is this story resurfaced? And then he replies, because Eck needs attention. Same as every broadcast. Ha ha, eight pitches are thrown, and he's sitting there talking about something he did 30 years ago with zero mention of what's going on. And then Stroman gets involved, obviously. Okay, it's like a little tag
Stro team. Show.
Can't help okay. himself.
Yeah, yeah, he can't that's control
I,
himself.
I talked to Stro in Cleveland.
So what, I mean, I guess, I mean, this story did resurface because Eck talked about it. But what is it, what is it about David Price and Dennis Eckersley, the way, and his, I guess, need to comment on it? A guy that supports the team, loves the team, but is trying to be as honest and as forthright as possible.
Yeah, when I got here, somebody asked me about that story, you know, and I wasn't here when it happened. And I stand there again, you know. I talked to David this morning, how he feels about it, and we're going to keep it between ourselves. But at the same time, you know, if we're going to turn the page, we have to turn the page.
You talked to Eck about it?
No, I haven't. I don't see him that often. Yeah. So, but I do feel that, you know, if it was 2 years ago, it was 2 years ago. You know,
yeah, because I feel like that's the last thing you need right now.
Yeah,
like with everything that's going on with the team, you know, trying to get back into it, fighting your butt off every single day to get back in the mix. Like this is the last thing you guys need because you're going to be fueling enough questions as it is.
Yeah, but I do feel that it's not going to be a distraction. I really believe that. I know my clubhouse. I know how I do things in the clubhouse. So, you know, the only thing that we have to do is play baseball. You know,
what my dad used to do to me when my brother and I would fight?
Uh-huh.
He would make us hug.
Yeah,
I think you should take
for how price. Long? How long?
I do that with my twins. Actually, with the twins, they turned two on Sunday, and
you have to hug until it gets uncomfortable.
The other day, one of the kids tackled the other one and started crying. I say, "You got to hug," and they go like, "Oh yeah," and they kiss each other.
Why don't you use that?
I think we need that. right in the middle of the field.
Bring the twins into the room.
Let them hug it out.
So let me just ask you, in closing out this topic, are you going to address it with these two guys? Do you have to, or do you just move on and let it go?
I already talked to David, and I know where we stand, so that's the only thing I have to do.
Will he talk to do you think to Eck? Because I get the feeling, and we had Eck on a while back, and I get the feeling that Eck didn't want to deal with Price.
He just wants to move on.
Yeah.
I mean,
but they're not moving on.
That's the thing.
I mean, everybody says they're moving on, but they're not moving on.
We got to move on.
All right. I know you were very emotional yesterday. You've been very emotional about your homeland and Hurricane Maria and the destruction it did and what happened to your homeland. And to the point where you did not want to go to the White House. You were very critical of the president and the federal government and the lack of funds. It turns out now we're finding out that there was major corruption. Mm-hmm. They've already uncovered $15 million of money that was earmarked for those people, for the victims, that is now in the hands of cronies of politicians. And I got the feeling last night you said you were embarrassed, but you also seemed sad. And I'm wondering, do you have some mixed emotions now from where you were when we discussed it with you on the show a couple of months ago?
No, not at all. I made my decision based on a lot of things, and you know, if they ask me to go tomorrow, I won't go.
Why?
Because I mean, there's other stuff that goes into it. I never said that the government didn't help us out. You know, if you go to my quotes or whatever I said in El Nuevo Dia back home, I said the government has helped us. But it's our reality, and I know how it works. At the same time, I've been telling people that I know we've been irresponsible before as a country, our government, and that was something I was talking about it before I made the decision. At the same time, I do believe that there's other stuff that is going on back home that doesn't have to be with funds. That's what I'm upset and embarrassed. You know, what Ricardo Rosselló has done the last week is not acceptable.
Have you read the text messages? Because I can't understand them.
Yeah, well,
can you read a few of them for me?
It's actually, you know what we did? We took Netflix out of the house, and yep, we just read the quotes, you know? And it's like, it's a sub opera. But we're embarrassed. We're embarrassed. And as of now, there's a lot of people that are upset. You know, it's a small island that we live with passion. And we decided that this is the guy that was going to run our country. And he actually disappointed a lot of people. And right now, you know, we're just asking him to resign, to step down, and we have to go somewhere else. But as far as, like, the government and the things that, you know, I said before, I always said that the government has helped, but our reality is a lot different than what people perceive.
But the government did say, the federal government and Trump said, that the biggest problem they were having in getting the money to the people was because of the handouts, because of the corruption, because it was getting in the wrong hands. And so, in essence, he was right about that, was he not?
I mentioned it before, too. You know, I said it before. You know, I never said that I was upset about the funding. I always said that we were irresponsible at some aspects, but there's other stuff that I didn't like, so that's why I decided not to go.
So you said last night because it's worse than in Hurricane Maria, and obviously the destruction.
In a sense,
is it because somebody of your own kind of is doing this to your own country?
No, man. Hurricane Maria, the only one that had control of that was the man upstairs. Yeah. You know, I'm a believer. You know, so God was the only one. He decided that was our reality, and we got hit by a hurricane. On this one, the people that we elected decided to put us in this situation, and that's what really upsets everybody. You know, we gave him the vote of confidence. We thought that we were going to take another route, and we were going to get better, and it hasn't happened.
Well, do you play a role? I see some of the players talking, Beltran, Molina, Correa, all talking about it. Do you now search? What can you do? I mean, you have a lot of power on that island as well, right? I mean, do you get involved?
I tweeted something this morning, and like, today is one of those days that is sad what's going on. There's going to be a lot of people marching in San Juan and asking for Ricardo to step down. But at the same time, I can't wait to tell the world that when we're united, we're very powerful. And we're going to show the world that we are powerful. And, you know, we need to do things better. We know that. And it starts with just letting people know that this is not acceptable, and we got to take another route.
It is a shame because you've got police and riot gear out there, and people are...
I do feel like today is going to be more peaceful. 2 days ago, you know, you got the right to do what you want to do. It's a democracy. You know, you can express your feelings and all that, but not the way we did it. I think it got out of hand. It put a lot of people in danger. So hopefully tonight is going to be peaceful, and we're going to send the message, and we're going to see the results.
All right. Time for the Cumberland Farms question of the week for Alex. Question was submitted by Brian Rodriguez of Taunton, Massachusetts. Who is the person you confide in most when it comes to baseball? I know the answer. It's Lou.
Your brother.
My brother.
Joey.
Yeah, Joey. Yeah, yeah, Joey. He's the one that he's the third base coach of the Pirates and kind of like the guy that is always paying attention to the Red Sox.
He refused your All-Star
Yeah. I mean, that sucked. That was.
Don't you hate brothers when they do that?
He's the older brother, so he has whatever he wants to do, he does.
I want, speaking of the All-Star game, I wanted to ask you the whole CC Sabathia going up to the mound. How did that thing develop?
Actually, Dana brought it up in the seventh inning. You know, I think it's something that we have to do as an industry. You know, like push this moments out there. You know, the NBA did it with Dwayne Wade and Dirk Nowitzki. Why not? You know, mm-hmm. And CeCe, he started his career in Cleveland, 3,000 strikeouts, 250 wins. He's going to retire. Why not? You know, it's an exhibition game anyway.
So last thing for me, you guys have obviously shown a lot of urgency the last two or three days, right? There's a lot of moves. You're trying to make some changes. First off, any changes today? I want to ask you about Heath Hembry. After the game, you made it sound like you were concerned. The velocity was down. How was he feeling?
Yeah, we just talked to Brad, our athletic trainer, talked to Heater too, and he's fine. You know, it's just a matter. I know velocity is down, but for me, it's more about location. When Heath is throwing the fastball up, it really doesn't matter the velocity. It's the deception. He gets people out there. Yesterday, he was down in the zone, and he got hit. So that's something we're going to address, and hopefully he can get it there.
So no moves?
No moves today.
So, quiet day.
So I know you're a football fan. I'm not sure how good the U was back when you were actually playing there.
We got on probation when I got there.
Okay, so that was a Nevin Shapiro. That was a Nevin Shapiro situation?
No, it was before. It was before.
Are you in favor of an 18-game regular season for the NFL?
18?
18 regular seasons.
That's a lot of...
18 regular games. Regular season games.
That's a lot of cool Sundays back home, too.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's a yes.
It would be like adding 20 games to the baseball season.
Yeah, 182.
No.
And one other thing, because I heard you mention it, and I should have picked up on it. You talked to Marcus Stroman? You had a little get-together in Cleveland?
Yeah.
You're good now? You're all good?
I mean, we're good, yeah. I told him, you know, just to make sure that whatever you said, don't take it that way. You know, I respect the way you compete. You're a good pitcher. So that's how I feel about
good
you.
Good prep work for when you meet with Eck and Price later on today.
Just good setup right there. That's good producing. See, right there.
That was the Cumberland Farms question of the week.
Hug until it's uncomfortable.
Cumberland Farms Farmhouse Blend Iced Coffee. Go to weei.com/manager. Okay. Submit your question for us to Ask Alex Cor every Wednesday. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
Have a good
one.
Alex Cor right here on OMF.